I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Dry and slightly warmer across most of the country is making for a good finish to January. Once again, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan to talk all things farming. As normal, a quick fire questions for Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868 366 4465. Adam, quick one for you here. Thomas asks, can you ask Adam, I have a few butty Aberdeen Angus heifers fit for the factory, 22 months, circa 510 kilo live weight, well fleshed. I am in Borbia and not far from a factory that does flat prices. Can you ask what would he recommend? One, send to the factory, or two, bring them to the mart. If going to the mart, would I want to be getting over €3 per kilo? Adam, he's not too precious about his butty Aberdeen Angus heifers. Talk to me. Where should he go with them?
Yeah, there's probably different prices out there, Jack, at the moment in terms of from Angus bonuses and flat prices. I've heard of 570 this week for flat prices, but that's sometimes for a chosen few, maybe in terms of maybe you're walking in for the street, you mightn't get that. I'd say maybe the mart, Jack, and let them peg away for them around the ring. You know, you're talking €3 a kilo there. If you kill that animal at 5-10 kilos at 53%, you're some, you know, 270, 275, 280 kilos. So multiply that up by the beef price of 570, you're into 1,500 odd euros. So I'd say mart, but you'd want to be getting €3 or a little bit along with it to go to the mart. And you will get that. We've seen that all week there in terms of those animals, those slaughter fit animals are definitely making that and over.
And back to you in a minute, and we'll touch off that mart job and the factory price leagues again. Darren, quick fire for you. Ask Darren, I'm considering clipping yaws. I'm considering clipping under the yaws. When should I do it if lambing in March, and any risks with doing it? And talk
yeah,
to you. Why is
he clipping the yaws? Yeah, look, there probably is a bit more interest in it, Jack. Like a lot of farmers in the past would have maybe relied a bit on Spectrum Scour Hall to keep, I suppose, keep on top of issues or to as a sort of fallback if they had an outbreak of E. coli. There's a lot more focus now around hygiene, and you'd see more farmers that will be clipping, say, around the tail head and underneath. It's generally only a small, like it's one blow around the tail head,
okay.
Maybe a blow underneath. You wouldn't be turning over heavy pregnant yaws now, Jack, close enough to lambing, not only for, I suppose, the discomfort in the yaws, but if you were a day at it yourself, you'd know about it, so you would. I think, look, he's safe enough doing it. There'll be a bit of wool regrowth now coming up to March. You'll be sort of, he said lambing mid to the end of March, you'll be saying the while weather might turn, you're not going to get huge cold weather. I'd be more worried if you were doing it today and yours going out next week. And I presume what he's saying is around mastitis, that type of stuff. Okay. He should be sound now doing it.
Okay, thanks for that. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, one quick fire again in for you. Ask Aidan, it's 10 degrees outside and I have a handful of freshly calved cows. Is it too early for spreading bag nitrogen? Aidan, talk to me.
Well, Jack, the first thing is it depends on where he is in the country, or he or her. So there's a change to the permissible, you know, spreading dates. The close period for spreading chemical fertilizer was delayed this year compared to other years, and this is the way it's going to be going forward. So if you're in Zone A, if you're those counties in Zone A, you can spread from the 26th, which is today, as far as I understand. No, yeah, so Friday will be the first day then of this week that you could spread. And then if you're in Zone B, it's not until next Wednesday, or I think the 29th, whatever the day that is. That's Sunday, so you can spread from Monday. And then if you're in Cavan or Monaghan or Leitrim or Donegal, you're not allowed to spread until the 15th of February. And if you're in Northern Ireland, you're allowed spread from the 1st of February. So that's roughly a run through of the day. Look, I mean, Jack, for me, there's two things. I have it in the management notes this week. If you're not going to be grazing at least half your farm by the middle of March, there's no point in spreading early nitrogen, because what's the point? Delay it until the middle of March and go at it then. If you are, you know, on dry land and you're able to graze early, I think, and obviously you're allowed to do so, then I think it's a good investment, provided you've got dry land and early, like recently received fields that have good content of perennial ryegrass. Okay. But half bag or acre of urea would be more than enough.
Good man, excellent. We'll come back to some of those issues again in a minute. Adam, coming to you first. Fair to say the Dawn Kildare chilling deal is garnering a bit of attention far and wide. What's your take on the job?
Yeah, so it's generated a lot of discussion out there, Jack. I suppose you'd be worried that maybe it'd mean less competition. I suppose if we look at it from the face of it, it's a fair enough player in the east of the country. Look, it's only handling maybe 4% of the cattle kill, around 65,000 head in 2021. But still, it's a price, and it's a price that farmers can use maybe sometimes. They were especially good for bulls and sort of not under 16-month bulls, but that bull between maybe 16 and 24 months, they seem to have very good contracts for that bull beef in Europe. And they were probably top of the game there during the year in 2022 in terms of that bull beef price. You know, they were up at 5.30 for a number of weeks there. And you'd just be worried, I guess, because Dawn Meats, they're probably the most vocal against bulls out there of the big three. So whether that will filter in now into Kildare, or whether that contract will be maintained, I don't know.
I was nearly going to say that to you. Is it because Dawn didn't have the bull option in terms of an outlet, and now that they have it, maybe with the Kildare job potentially, like could that give it a bit of a lift?
It could, but I suppose it'll be hard for farmers to understand that, though, if Dawn Meats are killing maybe bulls in Kildare, and I have somebody in Ballyhaunas with similar bulls, and they won't kill them in Ballyhaunas. Very hard to explain that to maybe a farmer on the ground as regards different markets. And I'd say maybe Dawn Meats might be afraid of going into that, you know, in a big way, that bull beef market, because it might sort of confuse things as regards. They have been very adamant that it's bullock beef, it's steer beef that they're getting a premium for, and that's what they want farmers to finish for them.
Okay. Your other big piece this week is definitely the factory leagues piece. Yourself and Phelim O'Neill have, I suppose, looked at the actual prices that were paid in 2022 from each of the factories. Adam, it's part of their remit to bring some transparency to it on behalf of farmers, that they have to publish their figures on a weekly basis, and they have to we publish them, and then you have the exercise of bringing them all together on an annual basis. Adam, there's a lot in it, like, it's fair to say, like, and I know there's some beef farmers that will spend hours and hours looking through the tables, looking through the various different categories, bulls, heifers, cows, steers, etc. Like, but give me a feel for it. Give me a summary, a kind of a couple of the take-home jobs in terms of that exercise.
Yeah, in fairness to Phelim O'Neill, this is a massive job of work, and Phelim cut out the calculator and collates all those figures, we'll say, from every week that the department report from each factory. As you said, each factory by law has to report prices paid on cattle every week. So we take 16, we'll say, different categories and grades. We'll say a U equals 3 equals, or an R equals 3 equals, an O equals 3 equals, and a P plus 3 equals. And look, there's massive variation there. And I suppose that's because different factories have different jobs on for different cattle, and it's not a one-size size maybe fits all out there. But if you take, for example, you know, like a P plus three equals Young Bull, there was a €300 difference there in terms of between the low one, which was Dawn in Charleville, and the high one, which was Dunleavy Meets in Mayo. Really interesting to see Dunleavy and C&J entering into the market and entering in quite high into the market this year as regards those two pretty maybe smaller on the end of smaller. So you don't price report until you get above 20,000 cattle. So they're quite small as in relation to ABP, Dawn Meets, Foyle or Keepak. But they've entered in to top of the pile for a number of grades. And I suppose it's showing that maybe those different factories in terms of having different jobs as regards Aberdeen Angus, we see Jennings's and Ballinrobe again being very high for certain grades of stock. But that Angus bonus coming in there and a flat price is coming in there high. And some of the big we'll say, you know, that have those supermarket contracts that you would expect maybe to be high on the list aren't actually high on the list. It's actually independents. I suppose that goes back to the Dawn Kildare Chillen deal as regards some of the independents are a lot higher than the big three on this list. But there's a whole range of figures here, and it's really interesting to see some factories moving up and down, and that's based on maybe different contracts. And I suppose in a year, as Phelim says, and as he said in the week in this paper, we'll say in a year where the price is high and those smaller independent factories aren't locked into maybe supermarket contracts or for example, a McDonald's contract, they can play the market a little bit and they can be quite agile in terms of paying more for cattle because they're dipping in and out of markets. Whereas in a weak time or a weak beef price, it's a lot harder for those smaller people to survive, I suppose, and the bigger, we'll say, the big three or the big four will survive a lot better during a time of a weak beef price.
And is that to an extent, just, and again, we're kind of going between both stories, but is that what Kildare Chilling were doing to an extent, and that they were a little bit more agile, that because they weren't big players, especially in the cattle side of things now, and I'll talk to Darren about the sheep side of things, but looking to you in terms of the cattle side, like they were not massive players. Call a spade, like 4% of the kill, like,
yeah,
big.
Yeah, 4% and a lot of cows in that, Jack, and a lot of bulls in that. I suppose Kildare Chilling may be a little bit unique in that, and it's the other side of the story, whereas farmers, I suppose, will first of all jump this week to say that it's less competition in the sector and it's another one gone, it's another one of the big independents gone. If we look at the factory price leagues this week, they actually maybe almost tell a different story because a lot of the Dawn plants are actually pricing above Kildare Chilling on a lot of the grades of cattle this week. So there you would say maybe, well, look at it, Dawn Meats might be fit to pay maybe more for cattle than Kildare Chilling. Look at Kildare Chilling maybe didn't maybe move really with the times maybe as regards into those supermarket contracts and maybe weren't competitive enough going in and that adding value onto carcasses. They were killing a lot of whole carcasses. They were selling sides maybe to other factories. They were doing a bit of contract killing. So in terms of, I suppose, adding value, the other Dawn Meats, Keepak and ABP have been a lot better at that. And that's
value.
Why, yes,
value and volume.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So that leaves them maybe a little bit higher on the tables, whereas, as I said, Kildare Chilling maybe were a little bit lower on the tables this year.
Okay, we could stay talking for a long time on it. There's lots in the paper, I think, this week on that whole space, like page 22, 23, 24, 25 is definitely a must read for a lot of sector and cattle farmers. Adam, just to finish off on the trade, I suppose, beef trade this week, where's it at?
Yeah, very, very positive, Jack. As I said, up to 570 there for Aberdeen Angus flat prices. You're looking at 530, 535 for heifers this week, 525, 530 for bullocks. Cows really on fire and on fire in March as well. We're up at 510 there, possibly even 515 for U-grade and cows. So, yeah, there's no stopping at the moment. To speaking to a few factory people this week, and they reckon maybe March, April and May are going to be critical months for them, and that they're a little bit worried about supplies coming along during that time. So, yeah, hopefully it'll keep going. And it'll go even more.
Okay, calf focus, Adam. Like, there's a second week of a calf focus. I suppose it's high in the agenda for a lot of farmers, spring calving farmers at the moment. What's in this week's focus?
Yeah, we've actually got a nice little update there on genotype and on DNA calf registration. This is on a pilot program that ICBF ran. We've got some news this week as well, obviously, from the Minister of Agriculture at the IFA AGM said he would like to see the national herd genotype. So that's massive news, I guess, in terms of how that's going to be put in play. The results from the pilot program that we have in the focus this week are really encouraging in terms of the turnaround time, 13 days in terms of turnaround time on samples. So that's a calf card coming back with essentially a sire. are on it. So then we can do the next step of displaying CBVs in March and get farmers to buy calves, maybe with genetics in mind in terms of the proper potential of that calf. So that's the first step in all that. And I think it's really, really positive. And hopefully we'll see that rolled out. Hopefully, I think in 2023, we're hoping to see that. But yeah, Martin Merrick is a lovely piece there on designing calf sheds. It's a full piece again on calves this week.
Okay, last question, and I'll leave you on this. The board be a quality assurance job, I'll call it. I know it's not a maybe technical name, but I mean, we've got a good bit of feedback on this in the kind of the calf roadshow around the country, particularly because I suppose farmers have to sign up to the board be a quality assurance scheme for that suckler scheme that you talk about there, the new calf reform suckler cow team, I call it, for want of a better word. Like, I mean, what do these quality assurance changes mean for suckler farmers then?
Yeah, I suppose it's just going to get a little bit more onerous, I suppose, in terms of, you know, this is a three-way partnership now between Chagas, ICBF and Board B, and this goes back to maybe, you know, evidence-based credentials based on where we're going with carbon footprint, and you're taking in the ICBF database, you're taking in Chagas research and advice, and you're taking in the Board B quality assurance audit system. So there's more maybe parts to that audit from 2024 onwards. For example, an auditor is going to walk into a shed and assess the docility of the cattle in the pens, or whether they're run away from you or not. He's going to look at coats, he or she is going to look at coats on the animals. So there's a little bit more there, and there'll be a sustainability action plan as part of that. So the auditor will list out things like incorporating red clover in your sward, LESS spreading, slurry spreading, all those little things. And then we're unsure yet as regards if you don't follow that plan, what happens? Do you not get quality assured the next time? So it's still, I suppose, in play there. It's still being drawn up. So we'll watch that space, but it definitely quality assurance is going to get a little bit tougher. And I suppose that's going back to the questions that we're receiving out on the CAP events is suckling to weanland farmers aren't seeing a lot of benefit to that at the moment, because or not, like, you get your 20 cent if you're killing animals, but for weanland guys, there's nothing there in terms of bonuses. So obviously they'll have to be part of that for SCEP, and that's where a lot of that frustration is coming from.
Excellent, 100%. Thanks for that, Adam. Chat to you next week. Darren, if I start with you, maybe in kind of, I suppose there was a number of issues that came up on the sheep side of the house this week. It started off on Monday night at the IFA sheep prices meeting. Like, you know, it's hard to think, Darren, isn't it, that guys are getting 150 euros a head for lambs, like, and you know, there's a price crisis there, effectively, like, yeah.
Yeah, sure. If we went back 3 years ago, Jack, and you were to say this, prices would have been up. Now, I know they've dipped, say, in recent weeks, but leave aside that and say that you had an average price in 2022 of 670 a kilo, you would have said to yourself, like, sure, it was dreamland. Like, but absolutely. Unfortunately, yeah. Everything that's happened in Ukraine and rise in, say, fertilizer, energy, feed costs, it's had a huge impact. Like, and there was a very good presentation by Michael Gustine, head of sheep program, to his based on analysis done by the Ag Economics and Survey Research in Athenry, and like, it showed that in 2022 the net margin on the average farm was just €7 per year, like a real, I suppose, shocking figure.
Negligible, like, I mean, no margin really. You know, give the call a spade, like, and that's down from close to 40, Darren. Like, so huge change, like,
massive change, like in 2021 would have been a good year. Like, it would have been, say, lamb prices was up. I think the lamb price was an average of about 660 a kilo. And it was the first time where sheep farmers said that they had a bit of money to reinvest in the system. And particularly, I suppose, farmers who were doing the job well, because look at that average, say, figure of €7 net margin isn't right across the industry, but it shows as an average what is. So, like, farmers that were producing a lot of lambs, high weaning rates, very good on grassland management, low cost basis, they really won out in 2021. But that system, in some cases, was hammered more in 2022 because they were more exposed to the cost. So the farmers that were at a very high stocking rate, say, particularly anyone who was feeding high levels of concentrates and at a high cost basis, they were very much exposed last year. And what's the worry, I suppose, is that the analysis shows that there isn't much going to change for this year coming.
Yeah, no, I mean, that as you say, is the worrying part. And that's, I suppose, the nub of the issue that IFA and Chagas both kind of highlighted this week. I mean, and it's funny, Darren, like, when that energy piece first struck, you know, and the prices started to rise, we kind of started looking at the dairy enterprise and the tillage enterprise as big users of fertilizers and energy effectively, and that it would affect them more so than, but like, really, while your guys are not massive users, like, whatever they use is a challenge for them, and you, as you said there, the costs have gone up considerably for, and the output, while gone up, it's not able to cover it, whereas Aidan's guys can cover the extra cost.
That's exactly it. Like, and we talked about that on the cap payments, that while sheep farmers, the cap payment numerically might be lower, in the same way in the cost, it might be in numerically it might be a lower increase, but as a percentage of income or as a percentage of their, say, yeah, cost basis, it's big. Like, and if we look at a lot of sheep farmers, they're on, say, maybe fragmented ground, traveling, yeah, a bit, so like even small things like diesel costs. Absolutely. Had a
the issue here is all them big new Jeeps that you bought in 2021, like, you know what I mean, they're sucking diesel now, like, you know what I mean, they might as well have a tanker pulling behind the Jeep, like, and they just can't keep the diesel back into them now. Isn't that it? Like, I told you to come back to bite you, like.
We nearly have to come for a fill, so we will, in a dairy farm. We'll swap and take. If we get a fill, we take a bit of slurry with it, so we will, or something.
Yeah, no, but I mean, we're laughing about it, but it is, like, Darren, it is very serious, isn't it? For, as you say, they're not getting the support on the cap side, and the cost piece has gone up. The price has gone up, luckily enough, in fairness, call a spade, like, it has gone up since 2020, but it's still not enough to cover that extra cost, like, and there's no support.
Yeah, and that was a big part of the debate as well, say, the other night, was how far can price go? Like, there is a lot of pressure on factories, a lot of pressure on factories to increase price. And this is coming at a time where we see cost price inflationary pressure. So if we look at, there was analysis done in the UK before Christmas, and for, I think it was a 12-week period, and it showed the cost of produce had gone up by 8%, and the volume sold had gone down by 10%. Now, that's in a market that is, I suppose, maybe experiencing more inflationary pressures, more concerns around spending because of what's happening in the economy. But it is also evidence across some other EU markets, particularly in light of where the whole, say, fuel thing is, this less disposable income. And we do know that lamb is one of the first to be curtailed or to be hit. Now, it came up at the meeting the other night, there is quite a big difference between the Irish price, Spanish price, and also French price. Factories would have said the other night that's taking account of new season lamb coming from the dairy flocks in both of them countries, and that hoggets are probably on somewhere of a pair, and that they would have had the same recent price pressure. A lot of also talk around getting access to the US market, getting access to Chinese market. We have access to the US market. There hasn't been any big volumes. ICM committed at the meeting that they are close enough to start moving product. It probably won't be big, but it'll give an extra outlet. And I think and anything that provides, like, the big thing what killed the sheep, say, prices in recent weeks, or the killed confidence, was that 50 cent of a hit coming out and over, like 2 weeks and your price is down 50, 70 cent. And that volatility, we see it in the back end of the year as well. Like, that's something that the sector has to tackle, and factories have a role in that.
Yeah.
As an overall, Jack, like, there's no silver bullet, but like, and I don't want to say take sheep farming against beef farmers or suckler farmers, because an awful lot of sheep farmers are suckler farmers. But if you look at, say, in recent years, the support that's there, and just take, for example, the 150 euros in BDGP for a cow, for the first 10 cows in the herd. And if you're to use the department's own figures of a ewe now being 0.1 of a livestock unit and a cow being 0.8 of a livestock unit, it's working out 7 to 8 to 1. Even if you're to leave it at 8, the 12 euros on a ewe is 96 euros. If your dad said BDGP and beef, you're up towards 200 euros and a cow. So there needs to be also more done And that's something that the IFA have been, I suppose, putting pressure on for a long time. But the difference now, or the difference from Monday night, is that there now is hard evidence to show that without this, you're into a situation. I think you mentioned to me that you were talking to a few lads locally, and that there was talk, even discussion about not letting the ram out.
Like, isn't it a sad situation, Darren? You know what I mean? And again, of course, look, it's a broader topic around food security but like, you know, if they're not going putting these ewes and lambs, and they're trying to draw down their organic payment, the per hectare payment that's there for very little reason, they're not they don't want organic premium product. I mean, they don't care about it. Like, you know, all they want is the payment. It's wrong, isn't it? Like,
oh, like, and that is a big concern. Like it's a big concern, even talking this week to Matt Manager down in Kerry, and he was saying, like, that at this day of the year, to be selling 30 kilo lambs for 50 and 60 euros, that them farmers, he said, that there's a lot of talk down there around organics, and that would they not be, while some farmers don't want, say, or don't like the idea of it, they're saying that, have we much other choice? And I think that is what has driven some people to look at organics. And like on Tuesday night, then you go to the Chaga Sheep Conference, and that was billed as one of the options. So it was, and rightly so, Chagas are there to show the opportunities to farmers. Mm. But it was a distinct sort of difference from your high input, high stocking rate, high prolificity, to the organic specialist, Elaine Levy, saying that, lads, there is a significant payment here that a lot of farmers will have to consider seriously.
Yeah, but it's not associated per se with the premium that you're going to get from the market. It's the per hectare payment that you're going to get from the EU for 5 years. Darren, we could talk about it. No doubt we will come back to it again. Like, I want to finish up with you on the Kildare chilling job, because it's a deal that has big implications, I'd say, even more so than the suckler side. It has big implications for the sheep side of things. Over 20% of the kill. Like, it was a big player, Kildare Chilling. And it was attracting lambs from Donegal to Kerry, including Tipperary, Darren, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was even more important right across the industry. Because, like, while you say farmers that are selling direct to Kildare Chilling will be worried, but every farmer is worried. I've had calls from sheep producer groups that have sort of that sort of purchasing mechanism that's set up on the average of a base price plus a bonus on top of it. And if I look back, Jack, for the last 104 weeks, and if I was to go through, say, all the quotes, Kildare Chilling are consistently either 10 to 20 cent above the two Irish country meats plants, which some will argue are buying more producer group lambs, but look at facts, let's deal in facts here. They're 10 to 20 cents above that. We don't get quotes from Keepack at League, official quotes. Dawn Meats quotes sporadically. So if farmers are worried about who's going to be the price leader and who's going to put up the prices here, Kildare have been the one who have consistently done it. And like you talked, Adam, about factory price leagues and being in a position to look at prices. Unfortunately, there's absolutely no transparency in the sheep side around price, around throughput, around anything. And that's another, I suppose, maybe big conversation that needs to happen.
I mean, so now, Darren, I'll throw back at you, like, that potentially, you know, Dawn take it over. They go to the markets. They go to the outlets that Kildare Chilling had. They could deliver a better price, or as good a price as Kildare Chilling have in the past.
Yep, and that of course is definitely an option, Jack. But all farmers can go on at the moment is the experience of the last year, and like some farmers would argue that. Well, if Dawn were going to do that or had that in mind, that why not be doing it for the last while? And I'm not to say that Dawn are going to come in and going to pay less price or anything, but the argument that farmers are making is this, and some farmers would have linked maybe the acquisition of Dunbia, that they became much bigger players on the sheep side. Maybe it's reduced or maybe activity in the markets down here. And they mightn't have been just as keen or as active in lambs in recent years. Add more sheep into the mix, there is a concern there around what that brings. Now, as you say, it could turn around and it could return good price to the farmers. But the concern has to be there, particularly around any absence in, say, price reporting. And like, you will get a situation now, like, we know that the ABP owned plants, the two Irish country meat plants, they're working somewhere, they'd say, about 1.1, 1.2 million sheep, about 40% of the kill. Kildare, roughly, say, 20%. Keepack, you'd say, roughly 5 or 600,000, another 20%. Dawn would have the capacity to do that 500,000, but I'd be surprised if they were any, if they were sort of 14, 15%, because they definitely seem to have been, say, handling more. But in the absence of figures, Jack, that's a void there. Unless someone comes out and says otherwise, we have to deal with what's there ahead of us.
Okay, excellent, 100%. Darren, lots more on that topic and the developments that are happening on in the print in the Farmers Journal this week and on and online on farmersjournal.ie. Thanks for that, Darren. Chat to you next week. Aidan, I'm surprised you have time to talk to us. Like, you know what I mean? We're towards the end of January and I'm sure they're queuing up for calving.
Yeah, but sure, they are. But sure, it does, you know, the high EBI.
The calves themselves. Now, Jack, the calves themselves. That's what you're going to say.
Yeah. only they don't go in calves themselves. So the work really is in AI, I find. You know, the cow will calf herself in AI.
If only Adam was listening to this, like, you know what I mean? And available to come in. Aidan, we were on the road this week again. We were in Cavan on Tuesday night and Portlaoise on Thursday night. I mean, the nitrates piece was the topic of conversation. Like, wow, it's really gaining a foothold among farmers in terms of understanding the challenges that are coming down the road in terms of the kind of changes that are happening in that nitrates piece.
Yeah, Jack, and I mean, I suppose we were buoyed by the crowds that attended the information events, but really showed was that there was a purpose for the, you know, there's a demand for it, a need for that knowledge to be shared. I suppose dairy farmers and all farmers in Ireland really have been operating in a bit of a vacuum in terms of what the impact of the 220 is going to be. I mean, the department love talking about banding and the impact banding is going to have, and we have a lot of noise around banding, but really the key message I took away from those meetings over the last week was banding is secondary to the reduction from 250 to 220. I mean, that's where the focus really needs to be, because we're losing our derogation as things stand. We heard in Cavan that even, you know, the Northwest and the Northern Northern and Northwest and the West Coast are going to be, as you know, are much at risk of losing the derogation from those catchments as far from the South East and South, because of the impact of phosphorus runoff into streams. So phosphorus is the main cause of water quality issues there, and then it's nitrogen in the southeast and the freer draining soils. But I mean, they're all tied with one brush under these measures that are the conditionality associated with the derogation and the terms that the departments of housing and local government and agriculture have signed up to when they were negotiating with the commission in order to renew the derogation for until 2025. So really, I mean, I don't see any way out of the majority of the country, bar maybe one or two small catchments where there's probably very few dairy farmers in it anyway, not going to be under 220 from 2024 onwards, unless something changes, you know. And, you know, is there a political will there for that to happen? I'm not sure. Is there a demand there from the Department of Agriculture to change something? I mean, clearly not. I mean, Ted Massey is the head of that section, and he didn't seem to have any interest in going back and negotiating. He said that they tried their negotiations and they just had, because they saw what was happening in Holland and they negotiated hard and ended up with a poor deal. So that's his, that's their answer, you know, it's the department's plan.
Yeah, and really, and you know, I get more annoyed when I hear, you know, that Denmark have one and Holland have one and these other countries, like, you know, but you can't really compare. Sure, you can't, Aidan, in terms of the type of farming, the type of dairy farm that goes on in those countries relative to ours and how milk is produced, you know, whatever, you know, I mean, it's just not comparable in terms of comparing one that we should get it and they shouldn't get it, or vice versa.
Yeah, no, absolutely not, Jack. And sure, the majority of dairy farmers in Holland and Denmark, they're more arable farmers, as they call it, tillage farmers, really. Do you know, they grow, their main crop is maize. They've arable silage and they've, you know, they've short-term lays for grass, but they're not permanent grassland farmers like we are here. Our system is built all around grass. You know, we're getting busy grow calving now because of we want to maximize the amount of grass that's in the cow's diet during that lactation. So it's completely different. We were discussing the impact there of, you know, even if they lose a derogation holiday, it doesn't really make much odds because they can export all their slurry. Literally, you know, they have cows inside all year round. All the slurry that those cows are producing ends up in a slurry tank. And they can then export that off to neighboring tillage farmers or even export it over to Germany or to Belgium or France, wherever they want, and get away with it that way. Whereas we're limited here. Like we can only, for the majority of farmers, they can only export up to 16 weeks worth of slurry storage because that's all that they're legally required to have. And that's only, what's that, like 25%, 20% of the annual year's supply. Yeah. So that's just not a runner for us. I mean, and we're then being penalized for our grass-based system. Now, to be honest, Jack, the grass-based system is at more risk of nitrate losses than in the indoor system. But there's a whole load of other benefits that come with the grass-based system, aside from that, in terms of carbon emissions and now, ammonia losses and all the rest.
Now, I counter and say that, listen, the grass, okay, it might be more exposed, but it's not the grassland per se, but maybe the surplus nitrogen on the grassland that is the challenge, like we'll say.
Yeah. It's the urine splashes, Jack, right? They're the main thing. So it's the urine splashes out in grassland. There could be 1,000 units of N in each urine, right? Urine splash there. But you can reduce that by making sure you're not feeding too much protein in your nuts, which we're already doing. You can make sure that the grass hasn't got excess nitrogen as it is, which we're also doing. So we're making sure that, you know, you've got clover there and you're supplying nitrogen in that way, and you've reduced the amount of chemical nitrogen that's being applied. So rather than, like, Jack, you know yourself, when you started off as, you know, writing for the Farmer's Journal, 300 and 400 units of nitrogen per acre per year was commonplace enough now in terms of what dairy farmers were doing. Now we're back to, we're talking now about 150 to 160, 170 kilos per hectare of nitrogen. Like, it's just a huge transformation in a relatively short space of time. My issue is that we're not getting the opportunity for the measures that were taken for that to be seen in water quality before we then reduce the derogation. Look, if we're here, Jack, in 2027 or 2026 and or 2027 or 2028, and we're still talking about water quality, I mean, we'd have to hold our hands up and say, listen, we need to change, you know, we'll accept at that point that we have to reduce the derogation to 50 to 20. But we're not there yet. You know, we need time for the measures we have to act.
Or we'll suggest that it wasn't the farming sector that delivered those nitrates or extra excess nitrogens into the rivers. Like, so if we're still there in 2027 or 2028. I mean, you've crystallized the piece in terms of the dairy page. You have a piece there from a reporting from the Grassland Conference, the Irish Grassland Association Conference, which was held last week. And effectively, I suppose it's bringing to a head the impact that this is going to have on farmers. Yeah.
Yeah, Jack, and the solutions around it. So, I mean, so these are the focus now is on the higher yielding herds. I mean, there's 17 or 20% of dairy farmers in Ireland going to be in this band. That's the top band, Jack, you know, the 106 kilos of N per hectare. Yeah. They're the ones that are hardest hit by this, and particularly hard hit when you consider the reduction from 250 to 220. So they're seeing a loss in profitability of up to, you know, 50 to 60%. Noreen Lacey then, who works for IFAC, she was speaking at the conference, and she presented some mitigation strategies that they could use. The most obvious one there, Jack, is to lease more land. It has the lowest cost impact on the farm business, even though her figures were 300 or something like that per acre to lease the land and do nothing else with it. But like that's and she also had one on reducing meal in order to reduce your milk yield. Now, I queried some in the paper this week. I queried some of the, you know, the response rates. My own personal feeling is that you could actually reduce the meal and it would have, you could reduce a lot more meal for the same level of reduction in milk required in order to fit into the lower band. And as a result of that, then you'd have lower costs. I suppose I was taking the Moore Park standard of 0.8 of a kilo milk for every 1 kilo of meal fed, whereas Noreen was looking at 2 kilos of milk for every 1 kilo of meal fed. So for me, I thought that was a bit out of sync, a small bit. So I kind of just balanced it out this week. And in that case, you see there was actually, it was break even for that dairy farmer if they were to reduce the amount of meal being fed in order to get in under the 92 kilo band. A lot of farmers in that, you know, they're milking, they're producing maybe 6,500 liters up to 7,000 litres. They're looking at their system to see what can they change in order to get back into the bottom band, if not for 2023, then for 2024.
Okay, we mentioned at the top of the show, Aidan, like calving is, cows are queuing up, I suppose. Calving is going to start in earnest on a lot of farms this week and into next week. Like, I mean, what's the couple of key kind of, I suppose, prep notes that farmers should be doing now, like, you know what I mean, to kind of just get ahead of the game? Like,
yeah, I'd say isolate your cows that are closest to calving. So, you know, if you've 100 cows, let's say, I'd be putting the 20 or 30 that are going to calve first into a pen nearest the calving shed and watch them 3 or 4 times a day, slip out the cows in that are beginning to soften. And then I suppose in terms of calving, have a bigger area for calving. You know, I know, and it might not as possible, you might say it's a bit late, you won't build it out, but just think strictly, like, could you convert a passageway into a calving year as well, just have an overflow for those really busy nights that you can put 3 or 4 cows out there, and at least they'll be safe. They won't get caught in the scraper, they won't calve in the cubicle shed. Colostrum then, Jack, the final one, you just can't eat it. Like, get enough of that in, have enough high quality of colostrum there, and probably I'd feed it with a stomach tube to make sure your calf gets enough, and it's the shortest way of feeding them, the quickest way of feeding them.
100%. Aidan, thanks for that. Update next week. Chat to you then. Thank you. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. Thanks to Grassland Agro for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.